Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Julius Baer's Moving Markets podcast. It's Thursday, the 25th of April, and my name is Helen Freer. I'll be speaking, first of all, this morning to Jan Bopp about the latest market news. Norbert Rucker is also on the show today, and given all the latest developments, I'm keen to get his latest thoughts on energy markets. And Nicola Jordan is back this morning as well with the latest news from the CIO office. But let's start, as usual, with the market news. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning, Helen.
So after markets started well into the new week, equities struggled to gain traction yesterday. Is this the market just taking a breather, or what do you think was the reason for this?
Well, Helen, investors are still cautious. They are more prudent and wary, uncertain about the path forward. And that's understandable. I mean, geopolitical risks are still there. Inflation is still sticky, and recent macro data remains stronger than investors would like to see. This week's stronger than expected economic data out of the Eurozone also began to cast doubt on the prospect of rapid rate cuts from the Bank of England and the European Central Bank this year. Well, that and comments from Bundesbank President Nagel, who cautioned that a rate cut in June would not necessarily be followed by a series of rate cuts. Fixed income markets didn't like it. They reacted with a sharp rise in yields yesterday, pushing most regions to 5 months high. And it wasn't the best environment for equities either. They seesawed more or less around the flat line, playing tug of war between decent earnings and higher yields. And at the same time, earnings expectations for some of the AI-related companies are impossible to meet, making it a tough environment for the entire equity market.
Let's stay with earnings for a moment. Analysts are laser focused on the Q1 reporting season right now, and it's a busy week. What does this mean for equity markets then?
Yeah, indeed, it is a busy week for earnings. By the end of the week, we'll have seen around 40 to 45% of earnings in the US. And we will have some real test cases here. And this means that there is always potential for volatility. So far, we had a very solid start into the earnings season. And that was also the case yesterday. It was mainly higher yields that made equities on an index level ending the day a little changed.
Okay, but as is always the case during an earnings season, there's more going on in the markets than the index levels would suggest. And once again, it's the tech sector generating most of the headlines.
Yeah, exactly, Helen. Now, we've already seen quite a strong reaction to Tesla's earnings and outlook yesterday, pushing the stock more than 10% higher. Yesterday, after the close in the US, we also got the quarterly results from Meta. Now, the company's profit more than doubled in the first quarter, while revenue grew by 27% year on year. Yet, Helen, the stock was down after hours because its revenue guidance came in soft. Its shares fell 15% in after hours trading. And adding to a more negative tech sentiment overnight, IBM slumped 8.5% after market, after its own results. But look, it's really the reaction to Meta's earnings that shows that there's really no room for errors for tech mega caps at the moment, and that expectations are very high.
Now, today, after the close, we have Microsoft and Alphabet reporting. So this will be interesting for sure. Looking at futures, it's going to be a rough start to the day for markets. You already mentioned yesterday's strong increase in government bond yields, especially in Europe. Still, investors' demand for these bonds remains high, right?
Yeah, investors are taking the opportunity to lock in these high yields, especially in Europe. Government bond auctions are generally going well lately. Yesterday, for example, Greece issued €3 billion of June 2054 bonds. That's right, Helen. We're talking about 30-year bonds. What do you think was the size of the order book for that €3 billion?
Well, I guess as you're asking me like that, it was probably a lot. I would guess, say, €20 billion.
€33 billion, Helen. €33 billion. So 11 times. The issue size. That just shows you that enough investors find the current yield level attractive from a long-term view and are willing to look through the noise that we are currently witnessing.
Okay, now we've mentioned a couple of things, but what else should investors look out for today?
Well, we'll get the US GDP data for the first quarter later today, and with that also some data on the labor and housing market in the US. On the earnings front, as you already said, investors will be looking closely at Microsoft and Alphabet's results. That's after the market close. And then we'll get results from Honeywell and Caterpillar that will also give us some more insights into the manufacturing state of the economy. And with that, back to you, Alan.
Very good. Thanks very much, Jan, for the nice roundup this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Norbert, great to have you on the show this morning as well. Good morning, firstly.
Good morning.
Now, let's turn to the oil market. There's been quite some turmoil lately after the recent geopolitical events. So what's the situation now, Norbert?
Well, things seem to have calmed. And that's more or less what some geopolitical commentators had also pointed out too, that the military action that we had seen over the past weeks had been conducted in a way that they're actually not pointing at escalation, but rather at de-escalation. And to be honest, we believe that the situation remains somewhat similar to last autumn when oil prices surged beyond US$90 and then fell back again. And this is kind of the pattern that we usually tend to observe in the market. So geopolitics is something that is a noise element, something that temporarily lifts prices, something that mostly affects the market mood and brings uncertainty in the risk premium. The reality is that even if these tensions and the potential for escalation does not disappear, the oil market tends to lose its interest fairly quickly and moves to something else. So basically, we see that prices should ease from the current highs or the highs that we've seen over the past weeks and should drop more towards the ranges where we've been earlier this year or late last year.
Okay, we have seen a period now with a fair bit of noise and headlines around geopolitics, though. Is this going to dominate for the rest of the year, do you think? Or what's your best guess, Norbert, on which topics are going to move the oil market over the next few months?
Well, if you look back at the surge in oil prices since beginning of the year, this was really not all about geopolitics. In January, February, and into March, it was more about the strength of the economy and this incrementally more positive news flow. So basically, it was about the demand outlook. There we see some stagnation in the Western world, some marginal growth in China, but also then really more solid growth in emerging markets. So I would say that this topic actually comes back also given the news we're getting from the world economy as of late. The thing is, however, that this kind of demand growth that we are seeing is largely offset by supply growth somewhere else. And there we especially need to look at the Americas, at the United States, obviously, with the shale boom that's ongoing there, but also Brazil and this small country, Guyana, which is a new charter, kind of the oil scene. Overall, the narrative that had been there at the beginning of the year that maybe this demand growth tilts the oil market into slightly undersupply so far has not been confirmed. If you look at the situation and the inventories, the storage situation, North America, Europe, Asia, they're kind of flatlining, trending sideways. And overall, we believe that exactly this should continue. So if we look at the fundamentals, the way we model them, we are not really seeing meaningful tailwinds to oil prices for the remainder of the year. But the topic most likely is exactly the growth outlook.
Okay. Anything else on energy markets that you'd highlight this morning?
Well, if you look at energy more broadly, obviously, we quickly look at the natural gas market. Their situation is also largely unchanged. If you look at Europe, we saw a bit of spikes in the natural gas prices related also to the geopolitical noise coming out of the Middle East, given that Qatar is kind of a main supplier of liquefied natural gas to global markets. Based on our views there, this should ease. And basically, the big topic there remains this, what some say or name, the tsunami of LNG, of liquefied natural gas, that's coming a bit earlier, that's coming this year already, not only next year, which should put kind of lasting pressure on energy prices overall. And we're also seeing the same phenomenon coming from the clean energy side with very solid production in Europe, but also in Asia, which just keeps prices on pressure overall. So this element of increase in energy costs that has kind of been taking our attention over the past 2-3 years has really been changing to the opposite direction. So we stick overall to our cautious views there too. That's it from energy markets.
Very good. Thanks very much, Norbert. Good to speak to you again this morning. And let's move over to you now, Nicola. Good morning.
Good morning, Helen.
Now, April has been quite a tough month for investors so far. What's the mood like in the CIO office at the moment?
It's still not too bad, I have to say. But obviously, I mean, we heard it from Jan before, markets have entered a difficult phase under the combined impact of endogenous and exogenous issues, as both sticky US inflation and rising Israeli-Iranian tensions weigh on asset prices. Still, we have been saying for some weeks now that a correction is needed in order for the equity bull market to continue in the longer term. But of course, the reasons for this correction, both the sticky inflation and increasing geopolitical tensions, are definitely to be taken seriously. We expect a volatile second and even third quarter up until the US elections, after which the equity market should resume its uptrend.
Have you made any changes to your asset allocation then?
Yes, indeed. As we have been fully invested since the beginning of the new bull cycle in October 2022, our equity portion in portfolios has naturally increased by quite a bit, lifting our overweight to more than plus 4%. While we remain confident in the continuation of this general uptrend, we think this volatile period is a good time to do some housekeeping and bring our equity exposure to a more balanced level. This is why we reduced our biotech and Asian REITs positions, which both are extremely sensitive to interest rates and will likely continue to underperform in the higher for longer rates environment. We decided to keep the proceeds in US dollar cash for now, which will give us more flexibility in this volatile environment and allow us to reconsider portfolio construction once a market pullback materializes.
Now, let's talk quickly about gold, because prices have cooled down a bit over the last few days. But how do you explain gold's remarkable rally up until then?
Well, I don't want to go into too much detail here, but the recent moves in the gold price definitely deserve a closer look. Interestingly enough, its long-established correlations to both real interest rates and the US dollar seem to have been completely reversed lately. And even the recent geopolitical escalation doesn't seem to be enough to explain this remarkable rally. We think it could be attributed, on the one hand, to the rapid increase in US debt outstanding, and on the other hand, to the increasingly frequent instrumentalization of the financial system by the US government to sanction countries that are not aligned with Washington's foreign policy. As a logical consequence, even if they are not in a position to fully exit their reserves in US treasuries, many foreign central banks and sovereign wealth funds are keen to diversify and minimize the risk of their assets being frozen or confiscated. We are obviously unable to demonstrate this link beyond all doubt, but the break in gold's correlation with real interest rates and the US dollar does seem to come from a growing awareness of the political risks associated with holding US assets. In that sense, we have to work with the hypotheses of increased structural demand for assets that protect against its consequences. Precious metals, led by gold, but also Bitcoin, for example.
I think you've been quite critical about gold in the past and don't have an allocation in your portfolios, if I'm not mistaken. Are you reconsidering this stance then?
Well, given our strategic decision taken a few months ago to exit the UCITS hedge funds in our multi-asset portfolios, we now have some space to reconsider the alternative investment allocation. In view of the developments I talked about before, we are currently considering the most reasonable approach to allocating some capital to alternative investments, and gold now obviously tops the list of candidates. Its recent performance has taken the yellow metal into overbought territory, but we would maybe consider buying on any pullback to around $2,200 per ounce. Having said that, we haven't reached any decision yet and will consider all the options in the alternative space in the coming weeks. That's it from our side. Thanks, Helen.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Nicola. And for more on the recent gold rally, check out the latest Beyond Markets podcast, where our experts Carsten Menke and Chris Irwin discuss their thoughts on the record highs in gold that we've seen lately. So that's it for today. Thank you again to my guests this morning, and thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's show and you haven't yet subscribed, then don't forget to do so. And please also leave us a review on whichever platform you like to listen on. And do join us again tomorrow when I will be back talking to more of our colleagues about what is moving markets. Have a great day, everyone, and bye for now.
The information and opinions expressed in this podcast constitute marketing material and are not the result of independent financial or investment research. Please refer to www.juliasbear.com/legal/podcasts for further other important legal information.
Für unsere deutschsprachigen Zuhörer. We would also like to make you aware of Marktanalysen und Gespräche, a monthly podcast in German, where Julius Baer experts discuss some of the latest market developments. We share our key research and insights on today's ever-changing economic landscape in German. Search for Marktanalysen und Gespräche on your favorite podcast player.